Hey guys, Fly on the Wall is back for another season. That's right, on audio and video every Monday and Thursday.
Follow and listen to Fly on the Wall everywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back in hour number two. Good morning. Hello. Happy hump day, everybody. Hope your Wednesday morning is off to a good start. Dirt and Sprague with you on 105.1 The Fan and the Fan Sports Network. Back from our one day off-ish. Off on the air, but on the golf course out at Langdon Farms for the Fan Golf Classic.
It was a fun moment for the one segment we were on the air. We got a little taste of the Cargo Shore Classic. It just happened to be the hole Joe Fisher rolled through, and him and Danny had a swing off on the par three.
Oh, dude, I do appreciate listeners that brought up the Cargo Shore Classic when they rolled through the par three. I got an early sampling of the anger towards it when I showed up at 6:35 a.m.
Somebody started yelling at you yesterday? No.
I got yelled at for you.
For me?
Because listeners were calling him something.
Okay. I never got yelled at yesterday. That didn't happen to me.
What? Shocking.
Nothing.
I'm the one getting
me.
Yelled at about you instead of him just confronting you about it, even though I told him it wasn't something you told anybody to do.
What did little old Dirt do? Little old Dirt didn't do nothing, man. I'm happy and friendly with everybody.
Yeah. Well, if you missed it, the Cargo Shore Classic, Joe Fisher won it. Danny and Joe hit a par three shot. Both hit greens. Joe's shot was pretty good.
They did.
And I'll give Danny the credit here.
It was the best one he hit all day by a mile.
Everybody was waiting for him to chunk it, not even get it to the green. And he delivered. He got it a foot closer than Joe Fish.
He did.
So they played the shamble rule of
play from the tee shot.
Play from the tee shot. So Danny's tee shot wins. And then they did the putt off. Joe nailed it. Danny missed it.
He did.
Joe won the Cargo Short Classic.
He got a birdie. Danny Moran got a par.
Somebody came
one
up
hole
and
match
goes,
play.
Yeah, you think you're going to be able to actually make it happen, though? And Danny goes, yeah, we'll try to make it work. And I just go, I'm never trying again.
No, it's not
good
happening.
Luck to you on doing that.
You guys go ahead. Pick a date. Let me know. I'll try and make it.
Have fun on all of that. But yeah, yesterday we did one segment. If you caught it, shout out to you. If you didn't, that's all right. We're here today to react to it. The Blazers hired a head coach yesterday morning.
They did. They finally did it.
Minnesota assistant Micah Norry, who's been in the NBA for a long time. He's been at Minnesota for six seasons, I want to say it has. Five or six seasons.
Yeah, I think since 2019, 2020, somewhere there.
Highly regarded as one of the best candidates on the market for the coaching pool and probably the best assistant candidate out there. Now, you know, Dallas was looking at Micah Norry. They chose to go Dusty May. That's, in their mind, the better hire, and I don't blame them for that at all. Dusty May has been a rising star in basketball very quickly. But Micah Norry, now here's the unique nature. Instead of just saying, hey, we got a head coach, let's learn about him, which we will. Somehow, it's weird how this stuff happens. It quickly comes out that it's a three-year deal, but it's a one-year guaranteed deal, and the two other years are team options, which I will at the front of this say, I don't know if I've ever seen that in the NBA.
No.
Pretty confidently telling you, I've never seen it. In fact, I went to other, you know, popular basketball people's accounts that were tweeting about this just to see the comment section, and somebody else shared what other coaches in other leagues thought about this, and it was like NFL coaches, and they were all like, what the F? Never heard of this before. This is insane. One guy mentioned that Dusty Baker had a one-year deal with the Astros.
Oh, okay. That was unique, though, because he came in, remember, in the aftermath of them firing their manager from the cheating scandal.
Yes.
And so they needed a guy kind of the last second because baseball was swinging the hammer around a little bit.
Right.
And he came in, and he was like 80 years old. Like, we'll do it for a year.
So, I don't know even that's accurate, but that was one rebuttal. But mostly this is unheard of in sports, not
yes,
even just basketball. It's unheard of in largely sports. And that became quite the storyline instead of more so like, hey, they got the guy that most people thought, if you could get him, that'd be a good hire.
Yeah, it feels like the entire time if we said that if they hire Micah Norry, it's going to be a good hire. He then proceeds to make that supposed good hire, and then the entire conversation isn't about the hire and who they got as a coach. It's about the contract that they gave him. And so we kind of knew that that was going to be the case. That broke. We had about 15 minutes to kind of digest the news, and then we went on the air yesterday. And we talked about it for one segment, and that was about it. And now it's had time to marinate as the day has gone on. And we talked about the poll question earlier. Do you care about the contract? It was an immediate vote for me of no. I don't care. I find it interesting. I find it unique. Like, it's a subplot of the story. That certainly is deserving of a little bit of airtime, but I don't think it's deserving of being the entire story. And I will say, like, The only thing out of this process that mattered to me as a fan was answering the question, do you think they made a good hire? Do you think that they got a head coach? That should be the only part of it that matters the most to fans. And if the answer to that question is yes, the rest of it can just kind of fall off your back and it shouldn't bother you that much. I will say, the two biggest criticisms I've seen of the contract, and I could not disagree more with both of them, but from just kind of digesting the takes from yesterday, I think Kurt Heelan had this and some others as well. The thought process of a coach being on a one-year guaranteed contract is going to mean that he is a lame duck coach and that players will not play hard for him. That was one of the thoughts that was thrown out there. He's on a one-year deal. Why would anybody buy into his messaging? And I just chuckle when I read that because we're literally coming off of a season in which our head coach was arrested by the FBI after the first game of the season. We were coached by an interim guy. Was he guaranteed after this year to be under contract?
I actually don't know the structure of his deal because he was an assistant.
But he did not have a four-year, five-year guaranteed head coaching contract, right? He's an interim guy. And they bought into him. Mm-hmm. We have good leaders inside the locker room. Mm-hmm. And if you're not going to be able to get a team to buy into you just because of the nature of your contract, I don't know how you're going to be as a head coach. So I just chuckle at that notion. Mm-hmm. And then the other criticism is, well, his priorities will be messed up because all he's going to care about is winning and not developing players, to which I would say the organization themselves said the time to win is now. The winning window is open. Isn't that like...
That is a funny response.
I was as pro-tank as anybody, and I'm still livid from the organization not going harder into the tank over the last 5 years. That ship has sailed, buddy. Like, winning time is now. We made the playoffs last year. This is not about development of young players.
Also,
this is about...
What players?
Right, who are we...
Name the players.
Young Hunson, who are we talking about? Is Shaden Sharpe still going to be on the roster? Is Scoot Henderson still going to be here?
If Klingon doesn't take a step next year, you know whose fault it isn't? Mike Anori's. It's Klingon.
It's Donovan Klingon, who's going into year three in the NBA.
If Scoot doesn't get traded and he's on the roster and he's largely going to continue to be this up and down player, is that Mike Anori's fault?
No. Nope.
Or is that just Scoot Henderson?
That's just Scoot Henderson's fault.
If Shaden Sharpe continues to be the, I'm going to give you 25 and then like 2 weeks of 8 points per game with not playing in the fourth quarter crunch time stuff.
And never trying
on
defense.
Is that Mike Anori's fault, or is that Shaden Sharpe for the last two previous coaches?
So that's who he's been.
I also saw the young development play. We didn't have a pick in the draft.
No.
We have, we're
trying to win now, man.
We have young Hanson. You can point to that, I guess, if you want. I'm not holding my breath on it. If all the young, Tamani's already established what he's going to be. Maybe his ceiling's a little higher offensively. Maybe it's not.
The floor is set with him.
We're too far into these other guys' careers, even though they're still young on the age chart, to be sitting here and going, well, we got to prioritize developing young players. Like, no, dude. They have Jrue Holiday, Denny Avdia, who is young, but's been in the league for a hot minute.
Right.
We got Dame Lillard coming back.
Yes, we do.
Like, you look around the roster. If you sign Rob Will, we'll see if that happens. Sounds like he's not going to be back. But if you do, like, you have too many players that are sitting in the, we've been in the league for a while. We know how to, Jrue Holiday. Like, we know how to do this stuff. And then your young guys, quote unquote, are going into their, what's Donovan going into? His third?
Year three.
Scoot's going into year four. Shaden is going into year five. Like, this is who they are. At some point, it's not. And also, by the way, that's not how the NBA works. I don't want to be a D here, but NBA head coaches don't spend their off days going, let's develop these guys right. It's like, let me plug in my system. Let the leaders be the leaders. And the young guys either got to be hungry for it. They can ask questions of coaches. That's not how that works, man. They don't just sit there and go, let's only work on the young guys here. Like, I'm with you 100%. I thought that was...
Those were the two main criticisms that I saw of the contracts. And I don't understand either of them.
It's ridiculous.
And then there's the thought of, well, it's the owner saving money, so why should you care about that? And I would say the other way around. It's an owner who gave a smart contract out from a business standpoint. Why should that bother you? He's under contract for 3 years. If he's successful, he will be back for year two and year three of the deal.
Yeah.
They're going to give him if they win for 3 years, he's going to get a contract extension out of that. So if on one hand you're telling people, why does it matter to you that the owner is saving money? The immediate retort to that is, why does it matter to you that he's on a one-year guaranteed deal? He signed the contract. Like, we can laugh about the process and we can bemoan how long it took. There is no doubting that in Tom Dundon's mind, this played out exactly how he wanted to play out.
It felt exactly how he wanted.
He wanted to
play
get
out.
Mike Anori probably the entire time.
Yeah.
He's the most established assistant coach and the highest up in terms of the food chain of where he was at on his
very respected
bench.
Coach.
Very respected coach. He waited him out. The Dallas opening was there. They hired Dusty May, and all of a sudden you got a coach who's 52 years old, who's won an opportunities in the NBA to be a head coach,
hard
has not got them,
jobs.
Finally has one in front of him and says, okay, I'll sign the deal. Mm-hmm. Like, it could not have turned out any better for Tom Dunn. And instead of just saying, hey, they got the guy that seems like a good coach, we were all distracted again by Tommy Two Nichols.
It has to, look, and look, in some ways, rightfully so, should be highlighted, he's operating on the cheap. We're well aware of that. I'm not even going to deny it. I just found it odd that, like, what? How many people's contracts do you ever care about?
Yeah.
Like, I'm legitimately asking, if Mike Anori agreed to it, why do you care?
I was more outraged when we gave Chauncey Billups 5 years fully guaranteed.
I was outraged.
And then
we
refused to buy him. And then extended him.
We gave him 5 years guaranteed with almost no coaching experience because his buddy, his former agent, was the general manager here.
Right.
They had a sham hiring process through the whole ordeal.
No, they interviewed Becky Hammon. What are you talking about?
The owner really wants Becky Hammon. She's progressive. But the owner didn't make the choice.
Talk about that over a Penguin Bones?
And then we give them the extension because they were kind of good at the end of the season, but they still weren't very good.
They're good defensively
so
now,
like,
don't you know?
I think all of it, you want to, I don't know why you'd care. Yeah. It's ultimately what I'm saying. Like, if I sign a bad contract, do listeners care?
No.
No, because half the time they don't even know it because I'm not the media guy. It's like, I signed an extension today. Give me a round of applause. I don't do that.
We did have an option.
We've done it once or twice.
On our first contract, we did have an option that we were unaware of. We signed a Mike Anori deal.
Yeah, we had a team option.
Like, wait a minute.
We did not. Yeah.
I thought I was going to be a free agent. Yep. I got a team option on this deal?
We've had those days.
Wait, I'm back for another year at the same salary? You're telling me that?
I found it a very odd thing. And it continues to be like whatever we can leech on about this guy being cheap, we will do. Like Danny said to me yesterday, because he's kind of on the other side of some of this stuff. He goes, yeah, I talked with coaching agents. They're livid. And I said, so?
Who cares?
Why do we need to care about that? Why does Tom Dundon need to care about that? All I heard is how cheap he was. Nobody's going to come here. We got the best assistant coach. I don't know if he's good.
No idea.
Nobody does. It's all about the roster anyway. But it's like, why do we care that he has... By the way, this is the Rod Brind'Amour contract.
Yes, it is.
Rod Brind'Amour got hired... And Dundon gave him a 3-year deal. I still haven't seen if it was a 2-option team year and a 1 guaranteed. But his first year, he made $600,000.
He was the lowest paid coach in the NHL.
And look, you can say that's not a way of doing business and you cannot duplicate what he did with the Hurricanes and winning the Cup. That's fine. But he's literally giving the Rod Brind'Amour contract in NBA terms. Hockey is $600,000. I would venture to guess Mike Anori's probably in the $2.5 million range.
Yeah.
And what have we heard about the NBA and NHL? It's different financially.
Right.
Okay, there. There's the $600,000 NHL. There's the $2.5 million NBA. And if he got him for less than that, he's even more thrilled about the deal. But Mike Anori signed it. So why does anybody care what another man chose to sign? I just find it all very odd. I care more about, is he a good coach? What's he like in the locker room? How much does Chris Finch feel about him? We got audio on that. We're going to find out about him with a Minnesota guy coming up here at the bottom of the hour. And yesterday, of course, had to be steered in a direction that, like, I just don't think real people care about at all about.
No, and somebody texted in and said, both things can be true. They hired a good coach and the contract is douchey. And I guess my reaction to that is I don't understand why it's douchey. And I think that's maybe some of this, for me, the entire time looking on the outside in. I've never been a part of an NBA organization. I've never worked for one. I don't have sources in the NBA or claim to have sources in the NBA. But as just like a rational-minded person who has signed contracts, who's worked for company, who's been through layoff periods and waves of, cutting jobs and all of that, I look at this stuff from the outside the entire time, and I kind of chuckle and say, welcome to the real workforce. Welcome to modern American business,
right? How many people sign bad contracts all the time?
All the time. And you prove yourself, you earn yourself. We've certainly signed a handful of them in our career, and you get to a point where you're established enough and you're successful, right? Like, that changes, and the tune changes a little bit. The layoff structure, we had to check out of our hotel early. Like, every little story and nugget that has come out.
Every single thing.
I just kind of roll my eyes at and say, why is that a big deal? Well, you can't do that in the NBA. Why can't you do that in the NBA? He just did it.
I saw yesterday, I think it might have been Holdall. Somebody was like, well, how's he going to, we'll see if he can hire staff.
You don't think people want to be an assistant coach in the NBA? I'm just confused by that.
Because
there's not 5-year job security?
I feel like it sounds like we're caping up for this dude every time, and I'm not. I'm just like, you guys are all reacting to every single mother bleeping thing at every possible turn. And I only ask, Why?
Yes.
What, can we play anything out? But right. No, it has to be an immediate.
Just play it out 2 years
bad,
from
bad,
now.
Bad, 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 bad. Yes. And then like, oh, he got what he wanted.
Right.
But it's bad, 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 bad.
If you're successful over the next 3 years, you have a good offseason, you add a player to your roster, you're a playoff team, Mike Inouye wins, you know, 60% of his games, whatever, 3 years from now, when he gets a 5-year contract extension, paying him $4 or $5 million a year because he's proven himself.
I don't expect him to ever be the Steve Kerr. He's
not
going to
make $15 million a year.
Actually not very smart.
No, it's not at all.
$17
million. What did it get Golden State this year?
Well, the 11th pick.
Yes.
Here is Mike Inouye. Let's move on from being angry about contracts that neither or any of us have signed, and it's Mike Inouye's decision. And I can't wait for the press conference. I'm sure that's going to be a lot of fun.
Tommy D's going in front of business leaders today, too. He's going to be around Portland for a while this week.
And I want to get to that today if we can. But Mike Inouye, I've been saying the whole time, I watched League Pass, and I noted him not as like, oh, Blazer future coach, just like, oh, this assistant's doing the interview post the quarter. He's really fun. Do you remember Bob Green, Montana Tech coach?
Who could forget? One of our fan favorites.
He basically would do these. Let me drop this real quick.
The key to the win was that your diggers took control early. Kind of like when you get married. That first day, your wife takes control early. And that's what the Ordiggers did.
Our football team was like the kid that plays second French horn in the school band. We got to play better. And that's a double-edged sword, you know. It's kind of like watching your mother-in-law go off a cliff in a Cadillac. You know, you got mixed feelings. He's like that black lab on the first day.
So that was Bob Green. We played that years and years ago. It was great. Mike Inouye kind of does the same thing. These are just snippets of multiple post-quarter interviews that he gives because Chris Finch wants to actually coach and not talk to the media.
Nothing fast, break points, boom goes the dynamite, there goes our lead. We got to treat Bane like you do the elf on a shelf on Christmas morning. You got to find him. You know, he makes everybody comfortable. He's like popcorn during Saturday night movies. Our paint defense was like 7-11, open 24 hours. Realize they had it's on like Donkey Kong the way they started out. First time all year that we were kind of on almost like a hot mess express.
Hot Mess Express.
I'm going to love this guy, dude.
I'm telling you, he's really likable.
Absolutely love this guy.
Here is Chris Finch on the topic of the contract coming out. He talked yesterday during the NBA draft. Here's Chris Finch.
First thing I would like to say about that is I thought it was a shame that a lot of the story about Mike's great opportunity was overshadowed by the nature of the deal that he signed. That's it. That's a personal decision. That's a business decision. That's between him, the team, and the agent. You know, it's always funny how these things get out. So I don't know the veracity of it. I really don't. The exact details of it, I haven't even had, you know, the guts to ask or inquire. So I just know this. There's 30 of these jobs. They're hard to get, and they're incredibly rewarding in a lot of different ways. And, you know, I know he wasn't focused on, certainly – money, but he was first focused on opportunity. That's what we preach to all of our guys here. You should chase opportunity, not money. And then I also know that you got to bet on yourself in this world. And especially when you're an outsider, we consider ourselves a little bit outsiders. We weren't raised in the game. You know, we didn't play at North Carolina or Duke. And so sometimes your path is just different and you got to take chances along the way. And I'm super excited for him.
Amen. None of your business. It's not your contract. If he earns it and he gets the extension or they pick up the option, then they work towards the extension, great. If he does well and he leaves and goes to another team, yeah, we're going to react to it. But like right now, we're reacting to information we don't have.
Yes.
And I found a lot of the behavior odd. It is none of your business. He signed the contract. I care more about the basketball side of this stuff.
Yes.
What's he like? I have a Finch cut that I'm not going to be able to get to because we got a guest coming up. But what's he like? What's his coaching style like? His background? His personality seems really fun in nature. So, like, maybe doesn't take things so seriously. And it's a 52-year-old longtime assistant getting his first shot in the NBA as a head coach.
That part of it is a really cool story. And I think at the end of the day, what matters the most is, did you get somebody that's going to fit into this market? I think the answer is yes. He is going to be beloved by Blazer fans because you hear a little snippets of the interviews and how he acts and how he treats his players. You hear some of the like trickly, well, we're going to go to Minnesota and we'll get some more answers on it. But almost every universal opinion has been, man, dang it. Mike Inouye left and he was beloved by his players. Everybody adores him inside that locker room. And as long as you're checking those boxes, man, that's ultimately all that matters. And it seems like he's doing that.
All right. We'll get to know a little Mike Inouye stuff, what he's like as a head coach, his relationship with Chris Finch. Longtime Minnesota assistant, now the head coach of your Portland Trailblazers. We'll talk with Ben Beacon of Locked On Timberwolves. He'll join us coming up next to give us his thoughts on Mike Anori as a lead guy for an NBA franchise. Our Blazers hiring a new coach. We'll talk with Ben Beacon next.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On The Fan. All right, welcome back in. Blazers got a new head coach. Mike Anori made that hire yesterday. And so being off for the Fan Golf Classic, we're back on today. Let's get to know Mike Anori a little bit from a basketball perspective. Our good friend Ben Beacon in Minnesota with the Locked On Wolves podcast does an exceptional job. I caught his one of his last episodes. He was doing, you know, takeaways from stuff, and the Giannis trade happened in the middle of his episode. And you could tell he's like, oh, my God. He's
That's like, happening?
I'm reacting to this live. but he joins us now on Twitter, B Beacon. On social media, give him a follow there. Ben, good morning. Thanks for hopping on with us. We know you're super busy. Chris Finch talked yesterday. The Blazers hired Mike Anori, the lead assistant for your Timberwolves, is now the head coach of the Trail Blazers. And I saw some interesting reactions. Seems Timberwolves fans are sad to lose a Mike Anori. Seems to have a great personality. And what you've seen from him, I think, over the last like 5 years with Chris Finch.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me. I think fans are probably, you know, selfishly a little bit upset because I think his TV interviews were the highlight of a lot of fans. The Wolves broadcast does interviews coming out of halftime, and I think they switch off every month. And every month, every time Mike Anori, it was his month, he always had, you know, it's not hard. You don't have to search very far on X to find or on anywhere on social to find some of those clips. But he always had some good analogies to use. He's got great humor. And honestly, like, that extends to what he does with the team, too. I mean, you talk to anybody with the team, and he uses humor to get across points, with the players and the coaching staff. And Chris Finch gave an interview during the draft last night and said the same thing. He's like, look, that's one of his best things. He's got a great sense of humor. He connects with people really well. And he's got a great personality to be an NBA head coach. And you know, beyond the X's and O's, which he's a really offensively minded, like, that's kind of his thing, is offense. But the way he connects with players is the thing that people always talk about, that always comes up, is he's just a really personable guy. And obviously in an NBA locker room, it's a relatively small room, and that's a very important skill set to have. And so that's certainly one of those things that stands out with Mike Anori, that you talk to anybody that's worked with him, and they talk about his ability to connect with people.
Yeah. I'm glad you kind of answered my first question there a little bit, but just to dive deeper into it, because we came off a coaching hire of Chauncey Billups, who, by the way, is still, I think, employed by the team. We just can't fire him yet because of the FBI investigation. But he was supposed to be a defensive-minded head coach because of what he did as a player with Detroit. And then, like, 2 years in, everybody realized he doesn't really know how to coach defense. So that was kind of a lie that was sold to the fan base. So Mike Anori's strength is offensively. That's where his mindset and his strength is as a head coach. How did that translate, I guess, on the floor? And what were some of the impacts that players maybe saw playing in a system built around his offensive mind?
Yeah, my understanding is that he was the primary guy that was drawing up and picking what the ATOs were, like coming out of timeouts, what are we running? He was the guy drawing up the sideline out-of-bounds plays, the baseline out-of-bounds plays. And he was kind of like, hey, this is, and if you look at the numbers, you know, on Synergy, the Timberwolves were one of the better ATO teams in the league the last few years. And so that was one of the specialties for Mike Anori. The other thing that he was really responsible for is rotations, and was kind of the guy saying, you know, like, hey, we should pair this guy with this guy. And like in the moment, obviously, like the whole coaching staff is doing that stuff between games when they do their scouts and stuff. But in game, Micah would be the guy who was like, hey, Chris, like we should go here, and would kind of, you know, interject there. And then the other thing that became apparent with how he talked to me, how he talked to the media, and also just some of the other stops he had prior to coming to Minnesota, is he wants to play a fast paced style of basketball. The Wolves never really played as fast as I think he wanted to. And you know, part of that is last few years having Rudy Gobert is a piece of it. And Anthony Edwards doesn't actually like to play all that fast, weirdly, but he wants to play fast. He wants to be aggressive. And if you go back and watch, I mean, he was the acting head coach during the games when Chris Finch tore his patellar tendon in the playoffs 2 years ago. That was their first conference finals year when they swept the Suns in the first round, and Mike Conley ran into Finch on the sideline, and Finch had to sit behind the bench and couldn't walk the rest of the playoffs. And they swept the Suns. They won in the next round against the Nuggets in seven games. And Mike Conley was the guy patrolling the sidelines. And if you go back and watch his media that he would do after the games, he always talked about, hey, we were actually aggressive. We took the fight to them. We played fast. That's something that he's always trying to drive is pace. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that's kind of, you know, forefront for Mike Conley when it comes to his offensive philosophy.
We're talking with Ben Beacon here of Locked On Wolves. I'm kind of curious about something, Ben, and I don't know if you have an answer because we talked about this earlier. Like, one big point of contention was his contract got leaked, or parts of his contract got leaked. It became a hot-button issue here locally. Our opinion is basically like, we didn't sign the contract, he did. I don't really care. I know it's very unique in all of sports to have a one-year guarantee for a new coach. But people are worried that it's going to hamper young player development. Now, the NBA is really interesting in the fact of, like, once the season starts, I don't know how much time these guys really devote to just, hey, let's talk to just the young guys here on the road trip. I think some of this is just players have to work hard, too, in the off seasons. What did you notice, or what have you heard, I guess, in any regard about player development for the Minnesota staff? I know Mike is a part of that, but in totality, like seeing some of the guys, Jay McDaniels, obviously Ann Edwards being a younger-ish player who's now blossomed into one of the faces of the league, just the development process of the staff in Minnesota that Mike Conley was a part of.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Wolves staff has done an outstanding job. I mean, you mentioned a couple of good ones. I mean, Naz Reid was an undrafted guy who won Sixth Man of the Year and has a big six-figure contract, and he's going to start for the team this year after they traded Julius Randle and could have started on almost any other team last year. He's at the forefront of the development stuff. And obviously now NBA staffs, I mean, you alluded to it, like, staffs are so big. They've got development coaches, and, you know, every team's got two or three, and they each essentially, usually, depending on the team, will have three or four guys that they're assigned to. And, like, so, like, Ant has his favorite coach that is a Timberwolves employee, but, like, he works with Anthony Edwards all the time. And so... It's probably less, like you mentioned, less one-on-one during the season with the individual guys. But as part of that whole staff, I mean, all of this development has happened under Chris Finch and Mike Conley. And Mike Conley's been the associate head coach. He's been his right-hand man for the last several years. And I think that speaks, you know, again, it's the staff. But it's, I mean, Mike Conley's number two on that staff. And so it speaks to what, you know, his presence. I also think, you know, he's been around the league a lot, but he's still only, I think he's like 52. Like, he's a relatively young head coach as far as head coaches go. I know, I guess nowadays, I guess there's a lot of guys getting jobs that are much younger.
I got 30-year-old guys here.
Right, yeah. I guess that's changed a little bit in the last few years. But, I mean, some of the staffs he's been on, too, like, he's worked for Michael Malone at a couple different stops. Michael Malone is a highly successful coach. And obviously, you know, North Carolina thought well about his ability to communicate with young players, you know, to hire him. But Michael Malone, you know, winning a championship with the Nuggets and had success in other stops, and Norrie was with him in Sacramento and Denver. And that Denver staff, I mean, Norrie was on it for a while. Chris Finch was on it briefly. I mean, that was right around the time they drafted and started to develop Nikola Jokic. So there's a lot of stories, a lot of guys that Mike Conley has worked with closely. And I think the Wolves staff overall has done a great job developing young players. I mean, they, outside of Rudy Gobert, and I guess, you know, ultimately they traded for Julius Randle, but like, much of the rest of the team has been draft and develop type guys. And Mike Conley certainly been part of that.
It's kind of an impossible question to answer, but I'm just curious. Like, his name, I feel like, has been at the forefront of a couple of off seasons in a row of this guy could get a gig, and Minnesota's been in some conference finals lately. And he seems to get passed over. Obviously, Portland has changed that narrative and now hired him. I'm just, what are your thoughts on him getting passed over? Because he's been an assistant for nearly 20 years now in the NBA, vying for these chances. And why that maybe would have been that other teams looked at him and said, no, we're going to go elsewhere.
I'm not really sure. I think it's what we just kind of mentioned a moment ago. More than anything else, is everybody's looking for the shiny new toy. You know, it's a much exciting, you know, sexier hire to sign to bring somebody in who's, you know, I mean, look at like Dusty May is a good example. Like, obviously he won a title, but like, you know, the guy's coached, you know, high major basketball for 2 years, and now he gets an NBA job. Chris Finch is the same story as Mike Conley. I mean, Chris Finch won a couple European championships. He coached in England, of all places, in a professional league there. Like, he was a G League head coach under, you know, the Daryl Morey Rockets and was kind of at the forefront of the 3-point revolution as the coach in the G League there. So Chris Finch, for a long, it was the exact same thing. I remember for years, Chris Finch's name was in rumors for teams as interviewing but not getting jobs. And then he ends up being the right-hand man for Michael Malone. Then he's the right-hand man for Nick Nurse in Toronto, and the Wolves hire him away. Same story for Mike Inouye, where these longtime assistants, they grind away. They work for a lot of different successful head coaches, and they don't always get their due. And so it's just less exciting and less of a fun, you know, sell to your fan base to say, like, hey, we hired this longtime assistant to be our head coach versus we hired this guy that just won an NCAA championship, or we hired this guy that was the, you know, was the offensive coordinator for this other really young head coach that just won a title, you know, Joe Mazzulla or whoever. Like, I think it's more of a hard sell to the fan base than anything else, because by all accounts, the guy knows his X's and O's. He's good with players. He's obviously great in with the media, which is one of those things that is also important if you're an NBA head coach. And so, you know, he checks all the boxes. I think it really is just, there's only 30 jobs and there's a lot of other great worthy candidates, and his name just never really stuck out. But now I think with the repeated success the Wolves have had, that certainly has helped. And then you look back and you look at some of the other teams he's worked for and other successful head coaches. Malone, I mean, he worked for Dwayne Casey, who won a Coach of the Year award and has had some success too. I think it kind of made his name rise back to the top of the list.
You know, I saw them when they made the Randle trade. I don't know if you went there, maybe you didn't at all, but like momentarily I'm like, oh, they're creating cap space. They're going to sneak back into the Giannis stuff, because they had reportedly been sniffing around that at the trade deadline. They didn't make that move. They signed Io, and then they ended up not getting Giannis. I'm really kind of curious here. Like, do you love that you wake up today, and now that Giannis has finally been traded from Milwaukee, the next one that the media is going to latch on and give us when we don't need it is,
oh yeah,
and Edwards' clock in Minnesota, Ben, it's ticking. They better do something now, or he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, everybody had to know it was coming. I do think it's going to go away. That chatter will go away unless the year goes badly, because already there's been, you know, that narrative started, I think, like yesterday morning, basically like right after the Giannis trade. There was a Brian Windhorst comment, which I think got taken out of context a little bit. He was talking specifically about the Wolves offense and double teams and how it was easier for Ant when Kat was there. But it was a pretty specific comment. And then it was, you know, the other guys on the TV shows that took it and ran with it. And then very quickly you had Kendrick Perkins on TV saying, hey, I actually made some calls. I'm not just talking off the dome here. Like, he had like a minute where he's like, I talked to some people that know Ant. He's happy. He wants to roll with his guys. He wants to roll with Jaden McDaniels, Naz Reid, Ayo Dosunmu. And then you had a couple local beat reporters. Chris Hine at the Star Tribune does an awesome job covering the team. And he wrote a book about Anthony Edwards. And he goes, everyone close to Ant says he's not just like content. He's really happy. And he, you know, he doesn't want anything to change in terms of his, you know, change of scenery. And so there is an element. And for Wolves fans, I mean, Kevin Garnett essentially played GM for a decade and it didn't go super well. Like, the Wolves listened to Kevin Garnett and brought in the guys. They signed Troy Hudson. They signed Joe Smith to an illegal deal. Like, all this stuff 20 plus years ago. And it led them to one conference finals and a bunch of first round exits. But Kevin Garnett was fiercely loyal to his guys and to the team. And there's a little bit of that with Anthony Edwards, where he's got his guys. Vibes matter. Clearly him and Julius Randle didn't have the best vibes, but he loves Nas. He loves Jaden. He loves Ayo. Mm-hmm. And as long as they don't listen to him for every single move, but they take into account the fact that the vibes matter to Anthony Edwards, I think it'll be fine. I do think they did a good job already of trying to quash that. I think if the Wolves get off to a bad start, you know, maybe trade deadline next year, we start hearing more of that chatter. But he does have 3 years left on the deal. He makes All-NBA next year. They can give him a supermax next summer extension if he makes All-NBA, which he would have had he not, you know, been hurt a little bit this year. And, you know, if they trade him, he doesn't get to sign that supermax. So there's a lot of incentive for him to stay put. I'm not super worried about it. It's just more annoying than anything else. That, and you guys know, I mean, being in a mid to small market, that thing is going to it's going to crop up no matter what you do. And thankfully, it sounds like there's really no, you know, fire where there's not even smoke, honestly. But it sounds like the Wolves and everybody around the Wolves are going to do a pretty good job of trying to kind of quell that conversation.
Well, especially when you got bigger worries like the Portland Trailblazers hot on your heels.
That's right, yeah. Hey, I said before the season I thought the Blazers would be in the play-in. I thought that they were going to be a good team, and it's a nice roster. I think they're going to be good.
All right, hopefully we can make a trade, get Jaylen Brown, and make this interesting in the West. Good stuff. Ben Beacon, our good friend for Locked On Wolves, on Mike Inouye as the new coach of the Blazers. Thank you so much, Ben, for hopping on. We appreciate you jumping on and giving us your thoughts on the hire of Mike Inouye.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, there we go. Good stuff from Ben Beacon. Let's react a little bit to it.
Yes.
A little bit more. Your thoughts are welcome. It is a Wednesday, but we're doing a mail sack, so it's kind of a mail sack Wednesday today.
Yes, it will be.
A Sparta TRT mail sack.
We can't miss a mail sack.
We cannot. Just,
that can't happen.
So
not allowing it.
All thoughts are welcome. 503-864-6326. Get to more next on.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays, and now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
On the fan. All right, we'll get to Sparta TRT mail sack today. We didn't get to it yesterday, so we must deliver
mail sack.
Brendan Sorsby, city funding, other NBA dealings.
Is this another best of show? Are we doing a best of show? I feel like we've done those topics for the last 2 months.
I saw the Sorsby news. I'm like, just go away, dude.
Just go away,
play
dude.
Canada.
Go to Canada for a year. We'll hear from you next April, okay?
I don't want anything to do with
Sit down and shut up, Brendan Sorsby.
Get out of here. But we'll talk about it. We must talk about it.
You're not that good anyways.
So we'll get to all that stuff. Good stuff from Ben Beacon. I was texting with him yesterday to come on the show, and he's been super busy, obviously, and he was like, hey, I don't have a relationship with Mike Anora. And I go, that's totally fine. I just want to know, like,
yeah, what do people hear? What do people say? What's the
you're
thought?
Connected enough. You see the games. You watch him. You've seen his press conferences. Like, I didn't need you to have a relationship with Mike Anora. And I thought he did a pretty good job telling us about Mike Anora. Development, you can argue against development if you want. The players that they've coached at Denver and now in Minnesota together with Chris Finch, pretty good track record there.
Mm-hmm.
May have opened up a spot for Naz Reid to start this season, which is a pretty big, you know, step in the undrafted category. You talk about, does he connect? Yeah, it's literally one of his best traits. He's a sense of humor, easygoing guy.
Team loves him.
He's been in the league for a ton of years. He knows how to be around NBA pros.
Mm-hmm.
He's the offensive mind of Minnesota. You can say, well, that's Ann Edwards, and I'd say, you're right, but if you're going to be mad at Tiago Splitter for out-of-bounds timeouts plays and being one of the worst in the league, Minnesota's one of the best. You know who runs that? Mike Anora. So
yeah.
Wants to play fast. I thought that was really good stuff of just giving us an idea of who he is as a coach, what he's about, what his philosophies are. I want to play a cut from Chris Finch, but just your kind of takeaways from Ben Beacon on Mike Anora.
Well, like, there's this idea that we have a lame duck coach because he only has a 1-year guarantee contract, and that's going to affect the locker room. And I disagree strongly with that. Now, maybe that ends up being true, but based on everything we've heard and again reaffirmed by Ben Beacon, players love him and they play hard for him. He has a way of cutting through, making serious moments feel a little bit lighter, a sense of humor. It just, when I hear things about him, it sounds like the kind of coach that I would love to play for. That's not going to be up your ass the entire time. He's going to have a little levity. He's going to crack a joke, maybe a bad dad joke. Like, there's just going to be a good sense of humor and a good connection.
He definitely seems like bad dad
joke
guy.
He absolutely is bad dad joke guy, and I love bad dad joke guy. I'd love to play for that guy. So I just, again, back to this idea that he's a lame duck coach, why would anybody play hard for him? I don't think that's a thing, and I don't think that will happen ultimately this year. The biggest takeaways for me were, and I think you kind of touched on it there, one of the biggest criticisms of Tiago Splitter in his time as the interim head coach was his out-of-bounds plays and some of the designs that he was drawing up in key moments of key games late when you inbounding the ball under the hoop or at half court. That is one of the strengths of Mike Anora. And the other thing that I took away from it was our best player is Denny Avdija.
Mm-hmm.
When is Denny Avdija at his best?
Downhill Denny.
Yep. When you get him out and going on the break and he's sprinting to the hoop.
It's kind of his only move, to be honest with you.
That's kind of all. He's got one bag.
He's gonna put his body in. He's going to get the free throw line or get a layup.
That's his strength. That's his best asset as a player. What does Mike Anora want to do offensively?
Go.
Now, follow-up question. How does that work with a guy like Damian Lillard, who's never been known to play that way or embrace that kind of style?
Yeah.
That's a question for another day.
It's going to be in waves.
But Denny Avdija is unquestionably your best player and the son of your universe right now, unless we go get a Jaylen Brown this offseason. Time will tell on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so finding a head coach who seems to fit the strength of your best player makes a lot of sense to me. I liked a lot of what we heard. I think you've spent the last couple of years trying to build a roster from a size and strength and switchability standpoint that can be good defensively.
Mm-hmm.
And now I like the idea of taking that raw talent defensively and pairing it with an offensive-minded head coach.
Well, you know, I've been in arguments with people about it's good to have a good defensive team. You need to care about offense.
What happened to the San Antonio Spurs in the fourth quarter of the NBA Finals?
Yeah, right.
Didn't have anybody who could get them a bucket.
Their offense disappeared. Dylan Harper was only going to lead them so far, and Wimby is still developing offensively. He's really good, but yes, he can get better in certain areas. And I got in an argument with somebody like, dude, their defense could be really good. If you don't have a functional good offense, you're not going to be that great. And guess what hurt the Blazers this year?
Offense.
So, like, we know they have guys that can play defense. Well, now we need more offense. And by the way, I can already hear the rebuttal of the ATO stuff with Splitter. Yeah, well, when Caleb Love is your ATO play and Ann Edwards is your ATO play.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
I get it.
Fair and valid.
But, like, we also can't point at one thing and say, I don't know about this guy in this department. We tell you about that department. You go, well, is that really his, you know, doing? And I'm like, you can't have both ways. So, I came away, and I continue to be, I'm looking forward to the press conference. I don't have emails anymore, I think, from the Blazers. I don't know who sends those because they fired those people.
Mm. Yeah, the press release emails.
I don't know who that's going to come from if I'm still on the email serve, but I don't know when the press conference is going to happen, if it's today, tomorrow, or Friday. But
that's a good point.
I'd imagine it's going to be happening this week. Mm. I can't find a reason why the hockey's done, so you're not distracted anymore.
He's literally in Portland today.
So
and that's a whole other
sense.
Segment. It would make sense to have it later this week.
So yeah, I'm just looking forward to the press conference. I think he is going to...
This dude's going to be an absolute fan favorite. We fall in love with bad basketball players. If you give us the Ted Lasso head coach effect, and this guy's making funny quips and press conferences...
The Ted Lasso dad joke guy?
He is going... Dude, we are going to love this guy.
Yeah, we probably will.
He's going to... Like,
what's the joke he makes when somebody goes... Mike, a lot's been made about your contract around the league and how unprecedented it is.
You know he's going to have a one-liner
ready
for
it. He's going to have something. Like, right. I don't know what it would be, man.
That's why we're not Mike Anori and he is.
Yeah,
I can't come up with
You're
a one-liner,
right.
But I know he's going to have a great rebuttal to
you
it.
You know he saw all the reaction.
Yes.
You know, and Chris Finch, we played it earlier, reacted to it.
Yeah.
You know he was probably like, oh, let me get ready for that answer. Yep. I'm going to start writing some material down. Let me play this very quickly. I'll go be a little over by playing it. Here was Chris Finch just... The guy he's worked with for years on Mike and Norrie's coaching style.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly through a modern lens. He's got a great kind of balance between the freedom of the game, how analytics feeds into that, you know, allowing players to migrate to their strengths, keeping things pretty simple. One thing I've been really impressed with him is game planning and defensively. He's been a large... driver of our playoff game plan success. You know, everybody feeds into it, but we often give him like those game plans right out of the chute. And, you know, he just kind of has this knack of boiling down large or complex plans into really digestible pieces for us to understand and knowing exactly what we're willing to live with and what we're not willing to live with. And you have to do that in the playoffs, you know. You have to do that every night, but in the playoff, that becomes heightened. So I just love the simplicity of which he sees the game.
How about that? Modern lens, analytics. Hey, by the way, a guest telling us he's really good on offense. Chris Finch himself saying he gets our defensive schemes in the playoffs. So
remember we hired a head coach, gave a 5-year fully guaranteed contract because he was a defensive guru, and then we found out he didn't know how to coach defense?
In the press conference, literally, I'm not a defensive coach. What?
That was the whole argument for hiring you.
But you played on the Pistons, so that has to mean you know defense.
You were on the Pistons. You guys are good defensively. Isn't that how it works?
Loaded third hour of the radio program. Your thoughts are welcome. 503-864-6326. It is a...
Mail Sack!
Wednesday, since we were off on Tuesday, Dirt and Sprague Hour 3 and 4 ahead on 105.1 The Fan.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup... Make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.